Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for this next hour, Ursula Rudenberg, here with KHOI reporter Joy B. Thank you for joining us to listen in. My favorite way to open Local Talk is to talk about the wild ones, stories about my personal experiences with wild animals in Ames. I don't have a lot to report this time, although I have to say that I enjoyed watching two groundhogs frolicking in our backyard this week. I usually don't like the groundhogs because they eat my garden, but I have to admit, watching those two fat guys leaping around in my backyard in the new grass was super adorable. I think they were on a date. Also, while it was cold, I was reporting on squirrels giving me a lot of intense and up-close eye contact, and now I think my theory at the time about what was happening, that they were doing this because they were hungry, has been proven right, because now that the snow is gone and there's lots of good things to eat, not one single squirrel in our yard has looked my way or even come near me. So much for neighborly relations. Wednesday night, I was at the Ames Chamber of Commerce Social Hour, hosted by Great Western Bank. Thank you, Great Western. I had a lovely conversation with a resident of the neighborhood around Hoover and Top of Hollow Road, and she told me that a family of red foxes is living there in either her or her neighbor's backyard, and little pups have been born. So we have city foxes. And finally, congratulations to Birds Unlimited for their ribbon-cutting ceremony last night for their grand reopening. Yesterday, two people were arrested in connection to a Boone shooting that led to schools being locked down. Officials said that they were trying to find someone who had shot another person near a park in Boone Thursday afternoon. Dispatchers were called at around 1 p.m. about a victim being threatened by a male with a gun. Officers headed towards Carroll Street in Boone near Franklin Park. There was a search, and the Boone District schools were locked down until students were dismissed for the day. And Joy, what you heard in a local coffee shop was that they also involved a high-speed car chase.
Right. There was a high-speed car chase going on around
Boone. It is Friday, so here's Mr. Dennis Hart with a summary of other local news from the past week from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks very much, Ursula. As always, it's a pleasure to be here in this seat on this Friday. Let's start with a look back at what made news last Saturday. And what made big news indeed was that a major business on Main Street closed its doors late last week, just days after its owner agreed to a 6-month suspension and voluntary surrender of its liquor license. The Old Main Brewing Company announced it was shutting down immediately after more than 14 years in Ames. The owner, Scott Griffin, had earlier agreed to a liquor license suspension for Old Main and for two other businesses he owns, Corner Pocket and DG's Tap House. Those suspensions are set to take effect May 13th and go until November 13th. The Alcoholic Beverages Division said Griffin owed substantial amounts of sales tax and withholding tax and penalties to the state's Department of Revenue. Back in November, the Iowa Economic Development Authority awarded Old Main a $75,000 grant for a 4-season rooftop bar. But the grant was never fully executed because of the ongoing investigation into the business. Also Saturday, a report on Democratic presidential hopeful Elizabeth Warren's visit to Iowa State University on Friday, where the Massachusetts senator talked about student debt. She said that debt is affecting young adults' ability to become homeowners, start their own businesses, and come back to small towns. She said her student debt forgiveness plan would cancel up to $50,000 in debt for anyone from households earning less than $100,000 a year. Her campaign estimates that the one-time debt cancellation would cost about $640 billion. Last Saturday also brought word that an Iowa State University student had researched a project about designing materials to generate fuel on Mars that would allow astronauts to return from that planet. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration wants to send crews to Mars, but at present, it's not financially or physically feasible to take them there and bring them back. So Brandon Vance is trying to figure out how to produce the fuel on Mars that would bring those astronauts back. One more note from Saturday, and it's a sweet one indeed. The city of Ames held a donut day on Friday, where pedestrians and cyclists on Lincoln Way in Campustown were given donuts for being smart and safe on crosswalks in the area. Among the behaviors that were rewarded with the donuts, pushing the walk button, actually waiting for the walk signal, and paying attention to nearby traffic. Sunday brought word about Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders' rally at Iowa State University on Saturday. Sanders told the crowd he wants to transform the nation and its national priorities and laid out his human rights agenda. He said too many children are living in poverty, that too many working families cannot afford quality child care, and that teachers are not being paid a living wage. He said anyone working should earn at least $15 an hour, and that the trade union movement needs to expand. Sanders also called for criminal justice and immigration reform. Also Sunday, word about state legislation that would allow stun guns on the campuses of Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, the University of Northern Iowa, and on community college campuses. For years, the universities have banned all types of weapons from campus, and Iowa State University Police Chief Michael Newton said he would have preferred that these bans remain in place. But lawmakers who supported the bill allowing stun guns said doing so would improve campus safety. Universities would still be allowed to keep felons from having stun guns on campus and would still be able to keep the devices from stadiums and hospitals. And last Sunday, a report on the restoration of an historic structure on Northwestern Avenue in Ames. It was built in 1915 and is now owned by Ames City Councilman Chris Nelson, who undertook the restoration project when he bought the building 3 years ago. It was a major undertaking. Over the years, various businesses in the building sold everything from produce to TV sets, but it had largely been vacant for years and was deteriorating badly. Now it's been rehabbed top to bottom, and it's the new home of a hair salon and barber shop. And the rehab project has won an Historic Preservation Award for restoration. Tuesday brought word that a Story County judge had moved the trial for the man accused of killing Iowa State student Celia Barkane Arosemena out of Story County. The judge decided that trial for 22-year-old Colin Richards would be held in Decorah in northeast Iowa's Winneshiek County. Richards' lawyer argued that the defendant could not receive a fair trial in Story County because of the media publicity surrounding the case. The judge said her decision to move the case to Winneshiek County was because it's outside the Des Moines and Ames media market. Trial continues to be scheduled for September 10th. A pool of 120 jurors will be called for jury selection. Meanwhile, Tuesday, word that a special election on a bond issue to support the Healthy Life Center in Ames might have to be postponed for a month. The city council is aiming to hold the election on August 6th, but a bill on Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' desk could force the vote to be held in September instead. The reason? The bill says that in odd-numbered years, such as this one, a special election can only be held on the first Tuesday in March, the second Tuesday in September, or the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. Yes, it's a bit complicated. Whenever it's held, voters will decide whether to approve a nearly $25 million bond issue to build the proposed Healthy Life Center. One more note from Tuesday, a story about Nevada's so-called grumpy bus driver who is ready to retire. Steve Jennings began driving buses for the Nevada School District 33 years ago. It was a career that worked well with his full-time occupation as a farmer. He said when he started, he was, in his words, young and stupid. He was 32 years old. Jennings does not mind that some people thought he was a grump. He said he smiled a while back when a mother told him her child called him a mean driver. And he said she thanked him. Steve Jennings will stop driving a school bus at the end of this school year. He says it's time to get on with something else. Wednesday brought word about the visits of two Democratic presidential hopefuls to the area. Beto O'Rourke showed up in Boone and said that President Trump's administration has interrupted progress that the United States was making as a place of acceptance. He said Trump and his rhetoric against immigrant and ethnic groups have heightened dehumanization in the nation. He said one issue remains the most important, climate change. Another Democratic hopeful, Julian Castro, came to Ames and said he's running for president because the nation needs a new vision with new leadership. He said he wants to make the United States what he called the smartest, the healthiest, the fairest, and the most prosperous nation on earth. He said on his first day as president, he would recommit the United States to the Paris Climate Accord. He said he wants to bring back decency and integrity into the Oval Office. Also Wednesday, word that Story County Board of Supervisors member Rick Sanders has been named the new president of the Iowa State University Research Park. Sanders has been a supervisor since 2010, and he will step down at the end of this month to become the Research Park's next leader. He will replace Stephen Carter, who retired at the end of last year after 18 years on the job. Sanders takes over an economic hub that spans more than 400 acres and is home to 90 companies and about 2,000 employees. He said one of his chief goals is to help the Research Park fulfill its mission to Iowa State University in its day-to-day operations. Also Wednesday, a report on this week's Ames School Board meeting, where board members heard presentations about the Therapeutic Learning Center at Ames High. That center has led to significant improvement in the school's ability to help students in need. 21 students spend most of their day in the center, and another 21 have been identified as high risk. 9 students have been admitted into inpatient hospitalization, and 7 return from residential treatment facilities. Thursday, yesterday, brought word that a Story County jail inmate accused of the 2017 killing of a man in West Ames has now been accused of assaulting Colin Richards, the man charged in the killing of Iowa State University student Celia Barcana Rosamena. 28-year-old Anthony Eugene English was charged with assault causing bodily injury. Both English and Richards are being held on first-degree murder charges and are waiting for trial. Jail video showed English chasing Richards around a jail day room and punching him in the head several times. Yesterday also brought word about what happens after Story County Board of Supervisors member Rick Sanders steps down from the board May 31st to become the next president of the Iowa State University Research Park. His supervisor's seat must be filled 40 days after he leaves the board. 3 county officials, the auditor, treasurer, and the county recorder, will decide whether to fill Sanders' seat by appointment or by special election. They will meet on May 20th. If they decide to fill the position by appointment, the public would have 14 days to petition for a special election. There was more yesterday, including a report about primary health care, which has locations in Ames, Marshalltown, and Des Moines, and how it's expanding its programs for patients struggling with opioid use disorder. Local providers use medication to stop the cravings of those who want to get off addictive drugs, such as heroin or prescription opioids. And one more note from yesterday, a report about 3 finalists applying for the job of Ames Assistant City Manager. They are Megan Dodge, who now works for the City of San Antonio, Deb Shildroth, who now works for Story County, and Corey Goodenow, who is the Assistant City Manager and Finance Director for the City of Pella. Whoever is chosen would replace Bob Kindred, who retired as Ames Assistant City Manager a few weeks ago. The Assistant Manager helps coordinate city operations. And there you have it. Your summary of the past week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, not applying for any other job, but getting set to take the weekend off and promising to return right here to this very seat on Monday, when I'll be revved up and ready to go with news from around the state of Iowa. In the meantime, Ursula and everyone, go ahead. Have a safe, healthy, and happy weekend.
Said by the Shirelles, and Mother's Day is right around the corner. If you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. KHOI reporter Joy B is also here with us. Joy, would you introduce your guest?
Sarah Buss is the event coordinator for Ames Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development. Welcome to KHOI. The Chamber and Economic Development have a lot of programs, and today we are focusing on one area where you hold regular events. One of them is your leadership series. Specifically, you have an upcoming event on Friday, May 17th, called LeaderCast Supercharged. As I understand, you will be featuring presentations by three local community members speaking about leadership and nine guest speakers from around the country. Tell us about the nine national guests.
Thank you for having me this morning. Yes, LeaderCast is a simulcast, so these nine national speakers will actually not be with us names, but we will be simulcasting them. They are speaking in a large facility in Atlanta, Georgia, and then they're broadcast around the world to facilities just like ours. So we'll have the likes of Gail King, Patrick Lenasotti, Dr. Caroline Leaf, Marcus Samuelson, Julia Flint, Andy Stanley, which is one of my favorites, Ginger Hardedge, Craig Springer, Carla Harris. Those are some of the nine national speakers. And then, like you mentioned, the supercharged portion of LeaderCast means we are going to be bringing in three local speakers to share their message as a way to supercharge our day. So those local speakers are going to be Andrew Allen, who is the CEO of YSS. He has a really unique story, really has transformed his life to be extremely successful, and now is giving back to transform lives of other kids here in Story County and the surrounding area. And so we're really impressed and honored to have him speak for us. Linda Carr, who titles herself as a professional encourager. She's married to Olympian Nate Carr, and they've lived all over the country. They have seven kiddos. And Linda speaks a lot, as well as her husband Nate. They're here at the Cyclone Training Academy. But she will truly tell us a story of how, when we're talking about living healthy teens, talking about raising a family of seven kids and just being their encourager to the band that her husband is as well. And she has lots of accomplishments too that she will share with us. And then our last one is Danielle Mindy, who is a realtor with iHome Realty. She was our Ambassador of the Year last year in 2018. And if you've never met her, Danielle has one leg and still gets up every morning and is just one of the most positive and encouraging and motivated people you've ever met. So she's going to tell you the story of what happened to her and how her outlook. So three really different perspectives on life, but definitely a way to supercharge our event that we've had now for about 6 years here in Ames. And this is the first time we will be at the Gateway Hotel and Conference Center. It will run from 7:30 in the morning till 4. Lunch will be provided, and you'll get some really good swag and just an awesome opportunity to network with the community members. And we'll have over 200 people there in attendance that day.
So who can attend this event? It sounds really inspiring.
So it is. It's one of my favorite events of the year. It is open to the public, but also to our members. So there is a discount for if you are a member. It does cost to attend, and you can check out our website at ameschamber.com to get more information about the cost to attend. But our membership, we have a membership price and just a community price, and so there's about a $10 difference there. But we welcome anyone to attend. It is, like I said, a wonderful event, and we'll have you out early so you can kick off your weekend early on Friday.
And then you also had mentioned to me that you can attend as a group also and get a different price.
Yep, there is a discount for buying a table of 10.
Okay. And then why should people attend this event? What do you think they'll get out of it that would be important? It sounds, especially the person from Ames, or that you're bringing that's disabled, I think that's really super inspiring to a lot of people to see someone that's overcome so many challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. So we created, this event was something that was brought to us by a couple of local community people who had seen it before and thought this would be a really great addition to our programming, and they were right. We have developed programming like this, so honestly, our businesses don't have to go to Minneapolis, Kansas City, Chicago. Often you can't afford to send people there, but also afford their time out of the office is another costly expense. So what we wanted to do is create programming right here in Ames where people could attend this type of leadership training and professional development and truly just grow ourselves. When you are more fulfilled as a person, you're a better employee. And obviously that's part of our mission here at the Ames Chamber of Commerce is making sure that we're investing in our businesses, but also our people.
Okay, so this is part of the leadership series, which are yearly events. And can you tell us, the Ames Chamber and Economic Development is seeking to offer the community with this series. It sounds like you want them to take away what you just spoke about. Is there anything else that you're hoping that people take from this event as far as leadership goes?
You know, we also hope that they come and they meet new people. Networking is also a strong focus of us at the Chamber of Commerce, that we really want to be able to introduce people to other people that can either help their business or spread the word about what they're doing in this community. So not only leadership and professional development, but networking and trying to connect our community together.
That's great, because I think a lot of people in Ames would like to see it grow, especially in areas of business, have more businesses in the mall and different things. So that's really great.
And
so,
you know,
chamber's important.
As far as opening to the community members, too, we would love those community members to meet the businesses that are there, you know, and so even connecting those and making sure those relationships are strong as well.
Andy, when you were listing the various guests that are coming in through
simulcast, yeah.
you mentioned a whole list of people. Mm-hmm. You mentioned your favorite was Andy Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell us, just as one example, why do you like him?
So Andy Stanley is just phenomenal, and he's been a LeaderCast speaker since we started with LeaderCast. And so I think what really gravitates to me is that his speaking is so practical, and it's really very centered about how you treat people. And I have quotes that I'm just pulling up here on my phone here that, like, this is one of my favorite quotes. He says, "As leaders, we are never responsible for filling anyone else's cup. Our responsibility is to empty ours." So just things like that, where it's just more of a giving attitude in leadership, and I really resonate with him and just his outlook. And so I find him to be one of the most inspiring speakers every year, which is why they bring him back.
Very cool.
That's great. So this has been Sarah Buss. She's the event coordinator for Ames Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development. And I want to thank you so much for sharing this information. And then just tell us one more time when and where, for our listeners, this particular conference will happen, and where someone can find out more about this and your other leadership series and events in general.
Absolutely. So it is May 17th. It'll be from 7:30 in the morning to 4 at the Gateway Hotel and Conference Center next Friday. You must register by today, or the price does go up a little bit for next week. And we will turn off that registration on Wednesday of next week. So we want you to get registered as soon as possible if you would like to join us. Lunch is included, but as long as a variety of snacks and coffee throughout the day. And, of course, there's a really fun giveaway also that each person will go home with. So that's exciting. But also check out AmesChamber.com. To see all the rest of our leadership series events and everything else that we have happening at the Chamber. There's a variety of calendars as well as a community calendar for events that don't happen with the Chamber that anyone in the community can submit and put on their calendar as well.
Okay, thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, Mama, like the roses, she'd grow 'em in the yard. But winter always came around and made the growing way too hard. Oh, Mama, like the roses, and when she had the time, she'd decorate the living room for all us kids to see. When I hear the Sunday bells ringing in the morning, I remember crying when she used to sing. Mama, like the roses, but most of all she cared about the way we learn to live, and if we said our prayers.
You know, I kept the family Bible with a rose souls she saved inside. It's pressed between the pages like it found a place to hide.
Oh, mama, like the roses in such a special way, we bring them every Mother's Day and put them on her grave. Oh, mama, like the roses.
Local talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was Elvis, of course, with Mama Like the Roses. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host here with KHOI reporter Joy B, and also with Iowa State and Ames Sustainability Director Mary Rankin. Welcome back, Mary, and as you often do, you have also brought somebody with. Welcome, Ed Lyon, Director of Ryman Gardens. What a treat to have the Director of the Ryman Gardens come in at this time of year. Thank you, and thank you, Mary, for bringing Ed in.
Of course. It's a delight to have you here, Ed. It's always a pleasure to be back on the radio talking sustainability. And I thought this was a great time to bring Ed. You know, spring is in the air.
Yes.
We're seeing it. We're smelling it. We're seeing it emerge from the ground. And we're all getting that bug and getting excited to bring spring into our spaces as well as enjoy them. And, of course, a fantastic place to enjoy them in all of their beauty and in so many diverse ways is at our lovely Ryman Garden. So welcome, Ed.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's lovely to have you with us, as I mentioned. And so let's talk about what's happening at the gardens. There's so many things happening at the gardens, I should say. But one thing that, particularly as we consider our own spaces and what we can do in our own spaces, there's a really unique area within the gardens that really looks at bringing all the beauty of nature without necessarily all the impact. Could you talk about the Hillside Garden area?
Sure. It's been a 2-year process to get it built, but it's a very unique garden style, I guess you would call it.
Yes, definitely.
The idea originally comes out of Germany, and the Europeans tend to be very novel in some of their approaches to sustainability. And this style of garden has been used in Germany in commercial applications for about 20 years. And, of course, one of the things we're looking at is low impact on both the environment and labor.
Right.
This style has reduced labor considerably, especially in municipal areas where that's a huge challenge. But it also brings about a reduction in water, chemicals, fertilizers, all of those inputs as well.
All very good things for a sustainable future, yes.
And if you come to the gardens, because this is such a unique garden style, it's the only one of this type that you'll see in Iowa. We have a brochure in a mailbox at the base of the garden. So certainly take one of those brochures, read about what makes it different. But it does utilize gravel. And then as an avid gardener, had you asked me even 10 years ago about using rock as mulch, which we all know some people do, I would have said absolutely not.
Exactly.
I've always been an advocate of not trying to grow plants in stone.
Mm-hmm.
But this is very different, and it's a very specialized gravel. It's a quartzite gravel, which won't break down over time. It's sort of rough and jagged. So it creates large pore spaces, air spaces. The idea is most of the weeds that we get are coming from the air.
Right.
People don't realize that. So there's 4 to 6 inches of this gravel on top of the soil. And when weed seeds drop, there is no soil for them to establish. So it makes it essentially sort of weed free. Now there's 1 or 2 times a year we'll have some labor. You want to cut out the dead plant material, because if that drops, it creates the compost in those spaces, so it no longer works. But again, going into your garden and only cleaning it out maybe once in the fall and again in the spring is substantially less labor than we usually spend in perennial gardens, borders, or things of that nature.
It sounds quite delightful, actually, looking at my own garden right now and what it requires. This is such an interesting idea, and I've seen different applications around just my own neighborhood, but yet I thought it was more of a, oh, they just want to have a rock garden. They don't really want to grow anything in it, right? And so now you're saying, no, that's a real possibility. That is fabulous.
The biggest problem is when you want to title it, they're so just calling it gravel garden, where there's many different
yes.
ways to grab. to garden with gravels.
Yes.
There's the Beth Chatto English dry gardens that use gravel. There's gardens. Greater Des Moines Botanic Garden has a gravel garden, but it's using pea gravel, which is different than this system.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, about the only place in the country you're going to find this particular style is around Madison, Wisconsin, because the guy who brought the idea from Germany to here is Roy Diblick. He's a well-known plantsman. He does a lot of work for the city of Chicago. So he created one in his own Northwind Perennial Farm, and then other people in that Madison area have picked up on it. Or if you're familiar with the Highline in New York City, they have used this specific style as well. But I think this is great because this is the only one in the state of Iowa, so people can come to us and see the style without having to travel much greater distances.
Yeah, it's such a fabulous opportunity, and definitely encourage people to get out to the gardens and check this out and to watch it throughout the season, because of course it will change like our own gardens do with the different plantings. And so I know that the brochure mentions this, and you mentioned that, you know, a lot of people have pea gravel and that's a little different, but right now that is a way that I could bring this sort of idea into my backyard, correct?
It is. It'd be your cheaper method right now, because the closest sources of the specific gravel we're using are South Dakota, St. Louis, and Wisconsin.
Okay.
So it's only $20 a ton, but
it's considerable
cost to transport it. What we're going to do, though, is work with our local landscape companies and encourage them to bring in a substantial truckload, and then the homeowners can buy from our local suppliers.
That'll be fabulous. And, of course, we'll have experts at Ryman Gardens to answer questions that we might have.
That is
if
correct.
If we want to do this in our own backyards. Well, I know from a standpoint of personally, only having to really go through my garden once or twice a year would be amazing. Reduction of the water, I mean, that's economic sustainability as well. And just in general, as I go through different areas where I can buy supplies for spring planting, right? I'm, oh my gosh, the aisles and aisles of chemicals and fertilizers and all of these things that I don't necessarily really want to add to our natural system. And it seems like this is a great alternative in just thinking about how to have less impact.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be one of the largest concerns of our future and for our future generations. We've used far too many chemicals. And you're talking to somebody who spent his first half of his career in agriculture and second half in horticulture. And, you know, we use a large number of chemicals. I've seen 6 decades of every pesticide that's come out, they say, oh, it's absolutely safe.
Sure.
At the time that I grew up on the dairy farm, we had a salesman that said, oh, atrazine's so safe you could drink it. And he actually mixed it in a glass and did that.
Oh,
I bet he didn't last past 35.
Right.
But, you know, every time they say, and you're talking
amazing.
To somebody who has a background in using all these, every time they claim one's safe, we see it happen time and time again, we find out that it has a negative impact not only on our ecology, but on human health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the issues we're seeing today that seem to be increasing, I think we're going to trace back to contaminated water.
Sure, mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And I think sometimes, I mean, obviously we want to have pretty spaces. Our schedules are so very busy, but I think sometimes if we just pause, if we just think about how we could do things a little differently and just, you know, more sustainably, think beyond our own generation, I think that's something to really consider. So everyone should definitely check out Ryman Garden, check everything that's going on, the Hillside Garden in particular we were just talking about, but you have so many exhibits also happening simultaneously at the gardens. And one that I thought sounded so interesting, and I haven't had a chance to go out yet and check it out. It actually opened on April 27th, and that's the Nature Games exhibit.
It's called Nature of the Game. I don't think most people realize and recognize when we've done the Nature Connects Art with Lego Bricks exhibit. We've done it twice here. I don't think people realize we developed that. We worked with an artist, but it's our actual exhibit. There were some issues with the artist taking over the trademark, so that is why most people...
So maybe that's why we don't know.
That's why people do not
All
know.
All right, but you've heard it first now,
that's
here,
right.
on the radio.
So that is still traveling the country.
And I didn't know it was all over. That's great.
We'll have the last of the five exhibits. We'll be here again next year for our 25th anniversary.
Wonderful. 25 years. Wait a minute. We have to go back and just say that again.
Yeah, 25
really?
Years.
Congratulations.
Next year.
That is so exciting.
But we decided in our industry, there just aren't enough really major exhibits now, especially affordable ones. And then we can't all afford Chihuly and Bruce Monroe. They're the really big, you know, very expensive exhibits. So we have created another one. It's at the gardens now, but it will travel the nation, go to other public gardens. That is nature of the game. This time we worked with architecture students in the School of Design. It is absolutely amazing, the creativity. And we think this one will really make its mark in the public garden field because most exhibits are ones that you walk up to, you look at it, you marvel over it, and then you walk on. We decided to create something that's truly interactive. So it's based on giant lawn games. So we take something like a chess, and we have right now at the gardens a giant chess set, but it's a demonstrating the food web. Mm-hmm. So the king and queen are a gray fox and a hawk, red-tailed hawk.
Fabulous.
And every one of these games have some ecological mission when you play it. So people can bring their families in and they'll be taught something ecological with it.
It puts you in ecology.
It does.
Yes. Oh, that is so exciting. I know there were a couple of them that the photosynthesize I thought was very interesting. It's described as a balance ball maze. So you're sort of balancing a ball as you walk through this maze. Is that what I'm understanding?
There is a game that you tilt back and forth.
Yes, right.
And the ball goes through a maze. It's based on that.
Okay.
It is very large. It's on a pedestal, so two or three people can get on it and tip it, and the ball will go through the process of photosynthesis. So as they're trying to get that ball, they have to get through the six different stages of photosynthesis to get the ball to its ultimate goal.
So cool.
Like pinball machine? In a way?
Yeah, but the very early ones, they were all hand done.
It's kind of like two long rods and you sort of moved the ball.
No, actually, it's a circular.
Okay, yep. So it's even earlier than I remember.
Well, and one of the very early toys that we played with, and this will show my age, are the little tile puzzles, which you would take and you'd move these little tiles around. Well, we have them vertical and giant.
Yes.
And so you will move the tiles around within this, but on one side, and there's two of them, on one side is what an ecosystem should look like if it's healthy.
Okay.
The backside was what will happen if there's negative impacts
it.
And because we didn't want somebody to solve it, and then other people come up and not want to play it because it's already solved.
Sure.
If you solve one side, the backside's mixed up.
Wow.
So it's encouragement to come and solve the mixed-up side.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. This sounds great. And I know there's another game that represents sort of a large-scale Connect Four and a large-scale Kerplunk, as I'm reading these. So these are games that are very familiar to us, but they put us within an ecological challenge that we are in the middle of right now.
Absolutely.
And I had no idea. I guess I had somewhat read that there was work happening with College of Design students, but this is phenomenal. This is something they've helped put together. It's in place, and this is going to be shared all around the nation.
That's right. We've worked 2 years with them. We are their client, so it gives them real-world experience. They had a budget. We went through a number of processes where they would present something, and the mantra that we gave them is kids can bust anything. And so when you think about it, this has got to survive our season through the end of October, and
right.
then it's going to go on the road for 5 years. It
wow.
has to be extremely durable. Mm-hmm. And they met that challenge, and the fabrication of these pieces has been amazing. And think about this. Those students, when they graduate, they can put on their resume that they help create an exhibit that is traveling nationally. So we feel that partnership is much more valuable than the one that we did with an artist, because this benefits Iowa State University students as well.
This is such an incredibly rich experience, and so integral to the experiences that we hope our young people are having, that they take out into the world, right? So
and our whole
exciting.
Public garden field is excited about this. I haven't even yet released the information for people to lease the exhibit, and I have at least half a dozen gardens that have seen it on our site, and they are banging at the door, when can we get this?
That's great. Wonderful. That's great. All right, so wanted to mention a few things happening this weekend. Plant sale.
Our busiest weekend.
The place to be if you want blooming plants or vegetative plants, vegetables, woody species. We've got it all, right, this weekend?
That is correct. In fact, I will go directly from here to help set that up. Tonight is members only, so there's just one of many perks that you can have with membership is tonight, as a member, you can get in from 3 to 7 p.m. before the public gets to shop tomorrow. Also, keep in mind, Sunday is Mother's Day,
yes.
and mothers get into the gardens for free.
That's exactly right. And this plant sale benefits a number of student organizations, as well as the Master Gardeners Program, and all of the proceeds go back to those groups. So there's so much that's being supported in that
Absolutely.
Manner.
Absolutely.
You mentioned Mother's Day. There's free admission. There's also admission over the summer for veterans over the Memorial Day weekend and people currently in active duty. A number of great classes coming up. A peony conference is going to be happening. The art fair, of course, is happening through the summer. A brand new training for youth master gardeners is being offered this summer as well.
Correct.
And then, of course, so many exhibits. And I want to also say that the trip is happening this summer. Of course, registration's closed, but you host garden trips around the country, and you're going to be putting out information for another trip, or it's already out.
It is out, so our members will get that information because these trips are for members. Another reason to join the gardens. The one that we already have filled is a nursery buying trip to Michigan. That's at the end of this month, so they'll get into some public gardens. They'll get into some major wholesale companies that you wouldn't have access to otherwise to get the behind the scenes. We'll be in private gardens. But there's also a trip in September to the Portland area. So we'll
Beautiful
be going
gardens
to,
out there.
Oh, absolutely. We'll be doing public gardens again. We'll get into some wholesalers. One of the primary breeders of new plant materials is Terra Nova Nursery with Dan Himes. We'll go there. He'll explain to the group how new plants are found and developed.
Fantastic. So much happening. Please go out to the Ryman Gardens website. Find more information. You can pick up information when you all go to the plant sale this weekend. But the website is RymanGardens.com. And so many things going on. If you haven't been to our gardens, you're really, really missing out. And as you mentioned, so many perks of being a member. So, Ed, thank you for joining us. All the best with all the amazing things that are happening this summer. And have a fabulous sale.
We will do that. Thanks for having me on.
And thank you for joining us, both Mary Rankin, Ames and Iowa State Sustainability Director, and Ed Lyon, Director of Ryman Gardens. And speaking of Mother's Day, KHOI reporter Pat Schlarbaum is going to take us to the top of the hour with an Iowa story made in honor of Mother's Day. Pat recorded this at a vineyard in Scranton, Iowa, called the John 15 Vineyard. And if you're not familiar with Scranton, it's about an hour west of Ames, just off of Highway 30. Here's Pat on Mother's Day and grape pie.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. the first singing cicada of summer or the last monarch butterfly in autumn are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. Today's phonology is in honor of our mothers this time of year and Mother's Day. And we learn about grape pie from Nancy Rogers with John 15 Vineyards near Scranton, Iowa.
Now, grape pie was pretty new to me. I love pie, but I don't think I'd ever had a grape pie. When did you start making the grape pies?
I had never heard of grape pie either until my aunt, Evelyn, mentioned to me that as a child, as a young girl, she had had grape pie and hoped that I would make one. This was after my husband Dean and I started our vineyard, and so she said, since you have grapes, I'd like to have you make a grape pie. That was probably about 2010 or so when we started that.
So you modified a recipe, or did you come up with a family recipe?
Well, actually, I had an old cookbook from the 1960s and looked through there, and I had always used that book for my pies, and there was a recipe for grape pie, and that's the one I used and still use.
My mom had a searchlight. Do you recall the recipe book?
I don't remember. I think it was something my mother had given me. It was just a good old solid recipe book.
So what was people's reaction to your grape pie initially?
Well, so many people had never heard of grape pie, and so they were a little skeptical. Some people were real grape lovers, so they eagerly tried it. And just to encourage others, we would put out samples, like at a market table, let them taste it, and the reactions were very positive. They'd say, oh, this is good.
Yeah, it's hard to get too much pie. As a pie maker, what is the most important recommendation or suggestion you could give to me to help me make better pie?
Probably two things. One, I learned with the filling. The filling calls for grapes, sugar, a little lemon juice, and a little flour for thickening. I started using cornstarch. It's a little more reliable for me. But my first pies, I never was quite sure if they were going to set up or be soft until I learned a trick from a friend that I put my grape filling in a pan on the stove and then added the sugar, added the cornstarch and the lemon juice and a little butter until it thickened up. And then when I put it in my pie crust, it was pretty much consistent every time it was going to set up. The second really important thing is a good crust, a good flaky crust, a good tasting crust. I kind of see myself as a scientist in the kitchen. I love figuring it out, trying it out, trying out different recipes, and I tried out all lard, all butter, half and half, more this, more that, until I came up with just the combination that I wanted. So I use lard for the flakiness, and I use butter for the taste, and it comes out to be a really good crust.
My impression as I was enjoying your pie at the Hotel Patti was this pie maker is a perfectionist. If there is a way to make a better pie, I think it would have already happened. But this is, it probably was my motivation to come and say, I would really like to meet whoever made this pie, because it is the best pie I've ever had. So you're kind of a scientist.
Well, I am. I go for perfection, or as close to as I can get. If I'm not happy with the result, then I want to see what I can do to make it better. Well, I was at a birthday party recently and took a grape pie to share with the people there. And as a young couple was leaving, the wife said, he ate your grape pie and he doesn't even like pie. And he said, I had two pieces of the pie. And then he said, I think you put lard in your crust. And I said, yes, I do. And so his wife said, I've never used lard in my crust. And the husband said, well, then you better.
And your husband, Dean, is just beaming here.
That was pretty
funny. What a great story. Yeah. Well, and of course, growing up on the farm, my mother always provided us with exceptional, wonderful pies. And one time I asked her what her favorite pie was, and she told me her favorite was lemon meringue. What is your favorite pie, Nancy?
Well, I hate to admit this. My favorite is cherry, with grape being a good second. I want to tell you the story about the high school student and the delicious.
You have a story?
I do. We had a group of high school students from the Greene County High School in hospitality and in food service. They came out with their teacher and did a field trip. They took turns going out to the vineyard and then coming into our facility and tasting and seeing what kinds of products we make from our grapes. And after doing all the tasting and finishing up with the pie, one young student came to me and he said, I have three words to say about your pie. Delish-us.
Okay. Well, it's hard to get better compliment than that from the high school kids. Yeah, they are. They're just delicious. Tell me where you're at here at the John 15 Vineyards, and tell me a little bit about your vineyard and also then your website.
We're located north of Scranton, just off Highway 30. That puts us about 60 miles west of Ames. We're living on a family farm. We started our grapes as kind of an alternative crop, maybe a retirement crop. But when we quit our jobs, we forgot to retire, and now we're in business. From the grapes, we, of course, do the pie. We do juice, jelly, jam, syrup, roll-ups, whatever we can think of, we make from the grapes. We don't make wine. We've just chosen to go in our own direction. We say that we grow happy grapes. They don't wine. We have a website if you'd like to check us out. It's www.john15vineyard.com.
And you have happy grapes that don't wine. That's, I think it's on a t-shirt.
Yes, it is. W-H in parentheses, I-N-E.
Your grapes don't wine. Well, thank you, Nancy Rogers, and thanks for sharing your grape pie at this time of spring when mothers are really being honored, and it's just nice of you to have some time to share with us your wonderful grape pie. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat. It was nice visiting with you.
And that is our phonology today about Mother's Day and grape pie. Theme music is from John Barleycorn, Must Die by Traffic. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio at Story City, Ames.
I know that this story is a true expression of Pat Schlarbaum's love for his mother, as well as the taste of grape pie. Pat Schlarbaum's told me about his mother's pies numerous times, and it's kind of, as I understand it, it's kind of a constant part of who she was and the other women in his own farming community in southern Iowa.
Okay, so you have been listening to Local Talk, and we have been your host. I'm Joy B. and Ursula Rudenberg, and thank you for listening. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
And our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin', and that is by Tom Richards and Al Harris, and from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard during this hour was Mama Said by the Shirelles and Mama Like the Roses by Elvis Presley.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So, if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team.
We are still raising money here at KHOI. If you have donated, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. The total raised so far here is $32,000, and we are looking to raise $50,000, so we still have a little ways to go. If you're not a member, why not join now? It would be a great time to do so. Please go to khoifm.org to donate safely online, or come to KHOI at the Old Ames Pantorium at 410 Douglas Avenue here in Ames. We are here. The doors open. We're a storefront, so you can just walk in and donate to become a member. And while you are here, check out the beautiful flowers both inside and outside our building, which Joy has cultivated. You will be glad you did.
Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Northminster Presbyterian Church, presenting their 2019 Vacation Bible School Marketplace 29 AD, an opportunity for experiential learning. Children from preschool to sixth grade are invited to visit and interact with a recreated marketplace from biblical times, June 16th to 20th. Information and registration forms are found at amesnpc.org. That's amesnpc.org.